What was your take on that? I guess it was about a doubling.
Yeah, I think it was doubling. It was a significant number, so it's something that's quite worrying. I'm not aware of any particular reason to expect this to be true. Letrozole is a slightly more potent aromatase inhibitor, and whether that's got any impact here is not clear. There was just a hint of that in the exemestane study, that there might be an excess of MIs as well.
The switching study.
Yes, the switching study after 2 years of tamoxifen. There was some early concern about cardiovascular events in the ATTACC trial, but with further follow-up, it's clear now that the excess associated with anastrozole is in mild to moderate angina. And when you look at more serious cardiovascular events, or in fact death from cardiovascular events, there's no difference whatsoever between the two drugs at this stage.
I guess the other issue is tamoxifen having a beneficial effect in terms of cardiovascular mortality? Of course, that's been heavily debated over the years. Initially, there was the Scottish trial that showed an effect, and then the NSABP didn't show an effect. At this point, what's your take in terms of tamoxifen and cardiovascular morbidity?
I mean, there was great optimism, certainly when we started the prevention trials, that this clearly established reduction in LDL cholesterol of about 20% on tamoxifen would translate into a benefit in terms of cardiovascular mortality. And much of the excitement about using tamoxifen for prevention is it would not only be beneficial for breast cancer, but also for heart disease. So if you could win on both of those accounts, you'd be well away. It's come, I think, as a disappointment that neither of the prevention trials have seen any benefit in terms of cardiovascular disease. And in fact, in the overview, when you look at cardiovascular mortality, there's no effect of tamoxifen there as well. These early findings from the Scottish study and, in fact, also the Stockholm study suggesting a cardiovascular benefit have not really held up. And I think it's a very interesting point that whenever you look at an intermediate endpoint like cholesterol levels, you can't necessarily assume that that will translate into the endpoint of interest, particularly when you're using a new agent.
Yeah, I can remember in the 90s, you know, Craig Jordan talking about, you know, the perfect SERM that would, you know, have only the beneficial effects without the negative effects. I guess the other thing that happened during that whole time was the Women's Health Initiative kind of came crashing down, showing that hormone replacement therapy didn't have a positive effect, maybe even a negative effect on cardiovascular morbidity, mortality. What was your overall take when we sort of, the dust cleared about that whole issue of SERMs and estrogens and cardiovascular morbidity?
It's been a very salutary lesson, and I think, although originally I thought the Women's Health Initiative was an enormous amount of money to look at something that wasn't terribly exciting, I think in retrospect it's been an extremely useful study, and as highlighted, I think one of the biggest disasters to ever happen in epidemiology, in the sense that the early case control studies looking at hormone replacement therapy came away with the conclusion that it would make you feel better and live longer, and that in fact it had benefits on a whole range of things, including cardiovascular disease.
Did you think the WHI would show a benefit, incidentally?
I thought that initially, yes. I guess I was fooled, like many other people, that the epidemiologic data was probably correct. And to have it so strongly negated by this study, I think, was very important. And I think really indicates now that HRT should be reserved for the purpose it was originally designed for, that is to control menopausal symptoms. And that for any other issues, there are better drugs or better ways to go about controlling heart disease, bone loss, and so forth.